across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And welcome back to Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, October 10th. This is World Mental Health Day. It's also Angel Food Cake Day, Cake Decorating Day. It's National Handbag Day. It's National Hug a Drummer Day. Coming up this hour, two very impressive guests. In a moment, we're going to talk to State Representative Katrina Shanklin, who is a candidate for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll visit with author Jake Kaminsky. His book, Beneath the Polish Moon, is a love letter to a Milwaukee boyhood in a simpler time. So we're looking forward to both of these discussions. Along the way, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Or you can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And you can also comment on any of the many Facebook pages where we run the show. And I haven't mentioned nearly enough lately that if a 6 a.m. show and the 7 a.m. hour is a little too early from time to time, the show is also a podcast. All you got to do is go to civicmedia.us or Apple, Spotify, any of the regular places you'd go. Search for Up North News Radio, and you can subscribe as a podcast to this or any of the other shows across the Civic Media Radio Network. And you can listen to our shows at your leisure. But if you're here listening live now, then you're going to know that we're being joined live now by State Representative Katrina Shanklin, candidate for Congress, Democrat from the Stevens Point area. Representative Shanklin, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It was nice to see you yesterday in Eau Claire. You were part of a panel discussion. And as I've certainly detailed with Tara Johnson and with Rebecca Cook, two other candidates in the race for Congress, this early part of the campaign is all about the road work and getting out and meeting folks. And I know Eau Claire was only one of the stops that I'm sure you've been making for this early phase of the campaign. What's it been like?
It's been fantastic. My favorite part of the job, whether it's, you know, in serving in government or politics, is meeting people. And here comes my dog Stitch to say hello as well.
Of course, yeah. We're very pet friendly here.
Yeah, I was in both Eau Claire and La Crosse yesterday and had a wonderful time. I'm hosting Coffee with Katrina's. And so Coffees with Katrina, I should say. And I've been doing this not only as an elected official, but now as a candidate for Congress, because I think it's important to meet people where they are and give them an opportunity to ask questions about not only how I'm going to win this race, how I'm going to beat Derek Van Orden, and how we're going to restore some common sense to our nation's capital, but also to just talk about issues both on the state and national level. People had a lot of questions yesterday in both Eau Claire and La Crosse, and I really welcomed that opportunity. We had fantastic conversations, not only about strategy, organizing, and building up capacity across the counties across the 3rd Congressional District, but also about really serious issues, whether it was childcare and workforce development, water quality, protecting the promise of Social Security and Medicare, and so much more. So this is just two of many Coffees with Katrina that I'll be hosting across the 19 counties of the 3rd Congressional District, and we're off to a great start. I really enjoyed the opportunity to meet and connect with people and chat again with folks I met as I was exploring a run and visiting with people in both La Crosse and Eau Claire.
I've said previously, and will continue to say, that the voters in the 3rd Congressional District have an embarrassment of riches in, you know, three amazing, experienced, talented women, each from one of the population centers of the district. It's a sprawling district for reasons we won't get into here, but it includes the Eau Claire area, it includes the La Crosse area, it includes the Stevens Point area. So anybody from any one of those areas, just by nature of the district, has to hit the road. It's something I know well, running in the 7th District a decade ago. You know, from Chippewa Falls, you got to go way up to Superior. You got to go way out past, you know, Eagle River, almost to Marinette to cover the 7th District. 3rd District is no different, and you're doing it through, you know, there aren't a lot of straight shots going from point A to point B, but it's what you have to do at this point to get your name out there in places beyond, you know, your assembly district.
Absolutely. And I think that's incredibly important. It's what the people of the 3rd Congressional District deserve. And showing them who you will be as a member of Congress while you're campaigning, they interpret what you do now in your campaign as how you will serve them down the road. And I think having opportunities like an hour and a half conversation where anyone can walk in. You don't have to register if you don't want to. You can roll up late or leave early based on your schedule and just ask a few questions, sit and listen, or ask questions afterwards. I think that's my experience as an elected official, is just being available to my constituents and being there to troubleshoot, being there to lend an ear, being there to provide support, and also being there to provide problem solving skills. And I think that's the message that I've been delivering across the 3rd Congressional District since I launched last Tuesday. I am a proven candidate with not only problem solving, but leadership skills. And I also have the ability to get things done in the Capitol, which is sorely needed in our nation's capital right now at a time of extreme dysfunction and chaos, thanks to House Republicans and the extreme Derek Van Orden.
How many bills have you had passed into law?
So I have co-authored and co-sponsored and introduced over 170 bills, which have now been signed into law. And I'm hoping that that number continues to grow as
what,
the
what is the number? What's the number for Derek Van Orden, number of bills passed?
That's a great question. You know, I am not confident that he's passed even a single bill into law yet.
I'm pretty confident that he has not. And so 170 to zero is a good place to start a comparison for Katrina Shanklin, who is running for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. We're going to talk more with Representative Shanklin right on the other side of this break. We're going to get our full weatherology forecast as well. And then we'll get into more about the 3rd Congressional District seat and what it's going to take to defeat Derek Van Orden, and what kind of representation people in the 3rd Congressional District need. Packers lost to the Raiders 17-13. I think that's all we need to say. Young team still trying to figure out which direction they're going in to get to the end zone. More with Katrina Shanklin after this. You're up north. Again, if you missed it earlier, today's birthdays include David Lee Roth turning 69 years old today. 7 a.m. temperatures around Wisconsin include 41 degrees here on Lake Wissota. Madison is at 43 in Waukesha and Hayward. La Crosse, 39 degrees still. Wausau, 44. Wisconsin Rapids, 44 degrees as well. Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology joins us now to tell us a bit more about the forecast for the middle part of the week here on this Tuesday. I see there's a little light rain in Green Bay at this hour. And again, with those temps in the 40s, let's see whether that continues in through midweek. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it looks like kind of some frost potential once again for some of the listening areas this morning. A frost advisory in Madison until 8 a.m., for Richland Center and Baldwin until 9 a.m., and then a freeze warning in effect for Amory until 9 a.m., so mostly that kind of western portion of the state. A bit more cloud cover today compared to yesterday for most. Still sunny around Richland Center up towards Baldwin. Highs in the low to mid-50s, primarily upper 50s for southwestern Wisconsin, and our coolest spot only getting into the upper 40s around Wausau. Wednesday, sunny for the southern half of the state, a slight chance for some rain in the afternoon hours for Madison, otherwise partial sunshine for everyone else. A little bit warmer tomorrow as a warm front comes in, mid to upper 50s for most. Again, the warmest spots in southwestern Wisconsin, getting into the mid 60s there. Chance for some rain showers coming in for southern Wisconsin Wednesday night. Then a chance for showers for the second half of the work week for all, mid to upper 50s Thursday. Similar temperatures for the southern part of the state on Friday. Cooler though around Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, over towards west central Wisconsin on Friday, with highs in the upper 40s to low 50s as that cold front starts to come through.
Pat, I cannot hear you. Just want to make sure.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sam. Sam normally is pretty good about saying, "Hey, dummy, open up your microphone." So there we go.
Sorry,
let's try
Pat,
this again.
I did in the chat, but you just didn't see in time.
You're right. I did not. Thank you, Sam. So back now with Katrina Shanklin. And for those folks who aren't familiar with the 3rd Congressional District, it reaches from the Eau Claire, Menominee area, just south of St. Croix County, down to the Illinois state line, all the way down the Mississippi River, but then partially extends up into the central part of the state and goes up and grabs that Stevens Point area where State Representative Katrina Shanklin is from, one of three announced Democratic candidates so far who live in the district and are campaigning around the district at this time. But before we left off and in talking about you getting around the district and introducing yourself to folks, it would be really nice if the voters at some point with the eventual nominee could see both the nominee, if that should be you, and Derek Van Orden up on stage answering these questions. Derek Van Orden notoriously ran away from any opportunities to debate and figured that enough national money being poured into commercials, making him look like the kindly, you know, neighbor next door would be enough. And it turned out to be enough last year in a close election. How confident are you that you can actually flush him out and get him on stage and have the two of you together there to talk about your priorities for the district?
Absolutely. I think the fact that he is now an elected official means that his constituents across the third congressional district have much more leverage. And I think that public pressure and forcing debates is incredibly important because, to be frank, people of central and western Wisconsin don't know entirely what Derek Van Orden is up to. And that's because he's being very quiet about what he's not doing. He spends a lot more time on Twitter than he does solving problems. And that is not what we need for a member of Congress. And I think what I have done in my last election, my opponent also would not debate me. And I beat the drum repeatedly until he was hearing from Republican voters who would not vote for him unless he showed up to a debate. And some of whom said, you know, just the fact that he was a coward and wouldn't show up made them switch over to the other side. And so I think that is something that I'm committed to doing. In both my Eau Claire and La Crosse coffees with Katrina yesterday, we talked about it. People were very concerned about that. They also both proactively brought up the DCCC's lack of investment and had they actually supported the general nominee in the last election, Brad Paff, who's a state senator. I believe he would be a congressman now. And so I think it's important for people to talk about that and to talk about how we together in the third need to make sure the DCCC doesn't provide that failed leadership again, because at the end of the day, Derek Van Orden had already made numerous, what I would call fatal errors in running for Congress, and his being at the insurrection on January 6th, using campaign funds to be there with an earpiece and having crossed the police lines should have been enough. His yelling at a teenager at a library should have been enough. But since then, we've seen him commit even more infractions, including but not limited to screaming at teenagers who are Capitol pages in the United States, Senate pages, I should say, in the United States Capitol. So it's clear to me that he doesn't have it or the ability to do the job of a member of Congress who truly cares about their constituents. And that's why he's been so quiet. That's why he has been avoiding public accountability. And I think the general nominee, should it be me, I am more than willing and ready now to hold him accountable. And that's what my message is going to be. It isn't just going to be about articulating a message of my Wisconsin values, I've served Wisconsin and what I plan to do when I get to Washington. Also about holding him accountable. The fact that he is not standing up to his party when it comes to the numerous military appointments that have not been confirmed because of one United States senator at a time when we are seeing several global crises play out, don't have an elected U.S. speaker, and we don't have a long-term funding government solution. So at the end of the day, I think that accountability is what I believe any challenger candidate needs to bring to the table. And that's a role I'm not only comfortable in, but that I am more than ready to do every day of this campaign.
In terms of the substance of what you know, Derek Van Orden should be doing for the third district, never mind if you can set aside all of his you know, personal quirks and dysfunctions. When you look at the policy side of things, again, you're facing the possibility of another government shutdown, and you're kicking the can not just with a federal budget, but with a farm bill as well. And of course, as you know, representing the district that you have in central Wisconsin and knowing what the third congressional district is like, what is that impact on not just farmers, but producers, everybody involved, you know, in the third congressional district, if Congress can't come together and work on a farm bill.
Absolutely. The farm bill is vital for farmers. As we all know, it is one of the most important bills that passes every 5 years in Congress. And it doesn't just include the SNAP benefits or food share for our for anyone who lives in poverty, who deserves access to healthy and nutritious food, but also includes a number of programs, whether it's conservation or crop insurance for our farmers. And those premium subsidies to farmers are incredibly important when it comes to protecting against any potential losses, whether it relates to weather or other events that could completely wipe out their yields. And so it is incredibly important that we pass the Farm Bill. I think that in addition, there are tremendous opportunities in the Farm Bill to talk about conservation and protecting our water quality. We've seen a few great programs get authorized and passed over the years, like CRP. And I want to see even more conservation programs expanded and be a champion for supporting our farmers, as well as supporting our farmers with water quality initiatives, which is something that I've done in the state capitol and would be happy to bring with me to Washington. I think in addition to authorizing the Farm Bill and making sure our farmers have the safety and security they need for their crops and their bottom lines and their family farms, we also need to make sure people have the resources they need to eat and be healthy. And that's a key component of the Farm Bill.
Now, you're going to be running in a primary again against some other well-regarded candidates. And so you have to navigate the same challenge that any Democrat or Republican has to navigate when you face a competitive primary. And that is appealing enough to the base of either party, which are the people that show up for primaries, versus the general election. And you have never shied away from talking about reaching across the aisle. I mean, you just said in the last segment, you've passed 170 bills into law. You have never served in the majority in your time in the legislature. So you've had to do that, you know, working and finding that kind of common ground. But the question becomes whether that's going to be enough in a primary for people who have seen Derek Van Orden. They see Donald Trump still leading, and they're looking for whatever red meat they can find. So how do you navigate being able to be true to your progressive roots and values versus the practicality of getting things done?
That's a great question. I started out as a field organizer in my career in politics, and I talked to hundreds of people in deeply red rural Wisconsin. One of the counties in my turf was Clark County. Another was Wood County. I had Western Marathon County. And then eventually I got Portage County. So I've learned how to talk to everyone. And what I've learned is incredibly important. It's that meeting people where they are with a strong message and authenticity works. And that's why my constituents trust me to continue doing the job for them in the Capitol. And hopefully they'll trust me and send me to Congress as well. I think that the message that I have of getting results is a great contrast to Derek Van Orden, who has not gotten results for the people of the third, and in his short 9-month stint in Congress has done very little but embarrass us and refused to stand up to his own party when it comes to the lack of leadership related to confirming military appointments, having a House Speaker, and funding our government. And I think that that message and that contrast is the strongest message possible to win in a general. I also believe that I have been and know that I have been a stalwart for our democracy, our voting rights, our reproductive rights, our right to breathe clean air and drink clean water, and a leader on environmental issues as well as public education at all levels, from pre-K and childcare all the way up to technical colleges and universities. And I think my track record in the Capitol, not only delivering when Republicans are willing to work with me, and I'm always the first to reach my hand over and ask for them to work with me on key issues, but also related to our democratic values. And I think that that message will resonate with voters across the third in rural areas, as well as urban and suburban areas. I also think that electoral results matter, and people are very interested in the way that I have outperformed the top of the ticket every time I've had a competitive election. In my 2022 election, the one where I was the most targeted and had the largest amount of money spent on me, hundreds of thousands of dollars, I won by 14.2% of the vote. And I think that those results matter when we are working to elect a candidate who can oust an incumbent, which we all know doesn't happen frequently, but it's more than possible in a swing district like the third. the most competitive congressional district in the state from a time and at a time when a congressman has done very little, if nothing, for us, but embarrass us and vote against us. So that's the message that I'll be taking with me, along with protecting the promise of Social Security and Medicare and making sure that voters and constituents know I'll be there for them and continue to be a strong voice in the Capitol.
All right, there you go. State Representative Katrina Shanklin, one of three announced local candidates in the race for Congress. You're going to hear from all three of them frequently between now and the primary right here on Up North News Radio. Katrina, so nice to see you yesterday. Thanks for visiting with us today. Safe travels, and we'll look forward to visiting again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
All right. You have a great day yourself. Coming up next, Jay Kaminski, the author of a book, Beneath the Polish Moon, a love letter to growing up in Milwaukee in the late 50s and early 60s. That's after this. You're Up North.
Hello, Mary Lou. Goodbye, heart. Sweet Mary Lou.
The Ricky Nelson song there is one of several oldies but goodies that are mentioned in Jay Kaminski's new book, Beneath the Polish Moon, a love letter, if you will, toward a childhood in Milwaukee, a childhood in Wisconsin, anywhere, really, you could say. Just need to substitute some communities and some landmarks. But, you know, talking about coming of age in that era and then trying to not lose touch with those memories when, you know, when we end up doing what we now refer to as adulting and not always in Wisconsin. And Jake is here to tell us all about it. Jake, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Senator. It was really a pleasure to be here, and I want to thank you for the invitation.
Well, my pleasure. When the book came out, and I took a look at some of the comments about it. It was quite clear that everybody was on the same page of enjoying the nostalgia. But you took it to a different point, that it wasn't just nostalgia. It was nostalgia that had basically gotten lost along the way as the central character here, you know, grew up and became a police officer in another state. Would it almost be fair to say that this is in part a cautionary tale for people, you know, not to wait too long to remember their roots?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, when you sit down to write a book, in my experiences, you know, there's so much of yourself that ends up on the page. And my life took me far from Milwaukee. I mean, I grew up in a real, maybe I would say a very idyllic era in 1960, let's say, circa Milwaukee, where life was quite simple. At least for a child, it was, and took me to Miami, running undercover teams for my career, and then later as an advisor to the State Department overseas in places like Bosnia, right after the war there. And, you know, of course, we lose our innocence. We know we do. But there was a time, I think I must have been, a little bit homesick when I was over in Bosnia and seeing a lot of the terrible things that were there. One of the things that struck me while I was there was I saw children, even amongst the ruins of the war, playing. And it just reminded me of how simple life was as a kid. And so I decided, you know, I'd really like to recapture that because it was such a special time in my life. The friendships were probably the purest of any friendships I've ever had. And I think with this book, I think it's the thing that's resonated with people from all over the country, not just in Milwaukee, is that those childhood memories were so precious, but they were also kind of without anything, without jealousy, without, you know, any of the things that us adults have as we get older. And I just kind of wanted to show the contrast between the two.
And then there's the mischief, the individual stories that we have in reading the stories of the boys that were growing up here. I was struck by the fact that any of us have stories that if we could write them down and if we had a little bit more writing talent, people would love to hear them. I think of my late father growing up in St. Paul, and there is a chapter in your book about the kids basically crawling under a bridge to try to, you know, get closer to these pigeons. And I remember my dad talking about, as a boy, anybody who's been to St. Paul knows the high bridge that goes over the Mississippi River, and how, you know, one of the things they would do almost on a dare or an adventure is scale that bridge, the underside of the bridge, all the way across the Mississippi River. That and so many other stories that people tell. People have these stories But then to get them down on paper is another matter. How long did it take you from concept to completion to work on Beneath the Polish Moon?
You know, really concept, what I would say, it was in my mind for years. And in fact, I was in the middle of writing my second novel, which was a sequel to my first. And I just stopped writing it and had to write the story. And it was just something that I had to tell. And I think, you know, life is, in my mind, in a little bit, we have all these little perfect moments in our life that we can remember with such clarity. And so many of those perfect moments were from when I was a child. And again, these innocent times, but they were quite adventurous. And kids were allowed to do a lot of things that they aren't allowed to do without supervision now.
You know what we've lost track of as well, and this brings me back to the title of the book, is for all of the discussions we have now about immigration, migrants, the southern border, one of my observations is that far too many of our current leaders have forgotten that they really are not that far removed from their own immigrants, family ties, whether it's grandparents, great-grandparents, whatever the case may be. The Polish Moon in the title, as I mentioned earlier in the show, refers to the large clock tower, the large bright face on it at the old Allen Bradley factory that was there. But you begin with, you know, the Polish ancestry of the family in this book, and bringing those values, bringing that work ethic to America and to the Milwaukee area, and really Wisconsin, and then places beyond, Minnesota, Iowa, and so forth, were established by people who had an amazing work ethic and an amazing dedication to family that we take for granted. But you really don't see that everywhere around the world.
No, and you know, it's a funny thing when you talk about this immigration stuff. And you know, as kids, we were Polish kids. It was a strange thing. You were American, but you were Polish, and you lived in a Polish world, particularly in the south side of the city of Milwaukee. But I went back to write this book. I wrote a lot of it at a coffee shop, Collectivo, down in the middle of the old neighborhood. And a lot of times I just park on the street near where my grandmother's house used to be. And I saw a little old lady come out to put her garbage out. And she was just in a simple cotton dress. And she could have been my grandmother. The only difference between her and my grandmother is she spoke Spanish instead of Polish. There's absolutely no difference. It was new people finding their way and working their butts off to make things better. And it really struck me when I went back, because there's no difference. It's just a different language, but there's the same experience exactly as us.
Yeah, I noticed that as well with Facebook has a lot of these groups now. There's old Eau Claire and there's old St. Paul, and I'm sure there's some that are dedicated to Milwaukee as well, where you can see those old neighborhoods. And you come back to the old neighborhood in this tale, and it's not the story of, oh, this place has really fallen apart and you know, these people don't take care of their neighborhood the way that we do. You recognize, as I do whenever I drive through some of these older Milwaukee neighborhoods, that these are like every other family at some point. These are families that are just trying to get themselves established, trying to scratch out a living, and their kids are thankfully oftentimes oblivious to that and off, you know, living their own adventures, and that still happens for all of the discussion about, you know, gangs and crime, which is very real. But I think you help people remember that there are plenty of others out there who are just scratching out a living and having adventures along the way in their old neighborhoods, wherever they are.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I have to remind myself, and, you know, when I look back, we were poor, but as kids, we didn't know it. I mean, our life was rich. I mean, we didn't have a television. My dad didn't even start driving till I was about 10 or 11. But you didn't know it. As far as you were concerned, life was good. And we all kind of, all those kids from the old neighborhood, I still am in touch with a few of them, and they've all done well and they're comfortable. But it's just part of that experience of coming into the world, into America, and making something of yourself. And I think it's still going on. And I felt it. I felt the energy when I was in Milwaukee writing this book 50 years later.
Let's turn more toward the present day character, because again, you do tell two stories in here that meld in the book. And that is, again, going on to a career in law enforcement from one of the central characters in the book. We are in an era now where for various reasons that we don't need to get into here, but, you know, law enforcement is seen through different lenses, as frankly, well, it should be, because, the, you know, not every law enforcement officer is the same. Forgive the cliche, but there are good cops and there are bad cops. And you tell the classic story of a good cop. And for those folks, for those officers out there who are there to serve, life is really rough sometimes.
I think it is. But in a way, in retrospect, I think it's always been that way. It's funny, I broke into the job way in the mid-70s. And those were the days of the, what do you call them, hippies or whatever. But there was a lot of anti-police. And the police were also thrust in the middle of the civil rights movement. Whether they liked it or not, they had to stand the line, I think. And, you know, they were called pigs. I see it as somewhat different because there's much more media now, but I think it's always been a really tough job. And it's a job that, you know, the cops get exposed to, not even so much. It's not like on TV where cops are constantly solving a horrible murder or they're having to shoot somebody or something like that. But I think I always viewed as that they have to watch. They have a bird's eye seat to man's inhumanity to man. And I mean that as humanity, not men or women. But they see what people are capable of doing to each other, either through passion or through evilness. And I think just being that spectator changes their life, whether they like it or not. No one can watch that for 25 years and have it not affect them, and have it affect them during their career. That they might react badly or they might react well, but it is a stressful job that most people don't have to see. I think it's that spectator that they have to be, which is, it's sort of dehumanizing, I think, to any normal person with a good moral center.
It's tough for anybody to unplug from a job, whatever level of stress is involved here. And look, we're not going to be 18 all the time. But in this case, again, the main character, we see kind of the courtship. We see a relationship that blossoms, but then eventually, you know, stress takes its toll on it because of, you know, how tough it is to be a law enforcement officer in this particular case. But again, what I see in what you're writing there is a reminder to folks not only to not forget their roots as their childhood, but not forget their roots from a relationship standpoint, to never stop dating, never stop courting, never let, as tough as life is, don't let that be an impediment to your relationship, because otherwise, you know, it leads to heartache and worse.
I agree. And I think all of us, as we get older, when we start to realize what was really important in life, I think we all have a bit of self-examination. And maybe part of that came into me writing this story, but I think you do start to think, wow, did it really matter that I was upset with somebody in the office or at the police department or the fire, anywhere you work? Was that really, were those little petty arguments worth it that I twisted myself in knots over, when the real important things are much closer to your heart and more closer to home?
Tell me about the novels that you like to work on, because I don't know that this is a book that necessarily lends itself to a sequel. I think it's a great one-off in terms of childhood and the tales involved, but you work on novels as well. Tell me about those.
Yeah, I have my first book was called Shadow Wolves, and it's a much more serious book than this. I would say it's a thriller. It's about a group of Native American trackers who work at the border against the drug cartels. And that was well received by the critics. I mean, I'm still not, Stephen King's not losing any sleep over me. But the sequel I have coming out, hopefully in the spring, it's finished. It's just with the editors now. It's called Labyrinth. And it's a sequel to that story, a continuing story of the saga of a battle with the Mexican drug cartels.
Wow. So then back to, let's close on the kind of more of the innocent childhood note, that's in the book. And it's so... some things are so different now. We were told, you and I were both of generations that were told, you know, go outside and play, and don't come back until the streetlights come on. You know, just don't bug me. Very few parents went to their kids, you know, sporting events and things. It's there are so many things that are different. Do you feel like if people see this book, it will help let their kids be kids, at least for a little bit more than maybe they do now?
I wish it would, because you're everything you said is exactly what I was thinking while writing the book. I mean, you're right on target, and it's true. I mean, if someone would have put my mother under a, you know, in an interrogation room and said, where's Jake right now? Well, I don't know. He'll be here when it gets dark or when he's hungry. But we really, I think we were self-sufficient. I think it built a little independence in us because we could think things out for ourselves and take care of ourselves.
Yeah. And kids are resilient that way. We need to protect them, but we need to remember they bounce as well. Beneath the Polish Moon, Jake Kaminski, look for this online. It was so great to get the opportunity to read this and talk to you, Jake. Let us know when you've got a new novel that we want to talk about. And thanks for visiting with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Pat. Bye-bye.
Yep. When we come back, Chad Holmes will join us to tell us what's on Bull Falls Radio on his show coming up next in the Wausau area. This is Up North News Radio. We'll be back after this. We have got Chad Holmes standing by, and we will talk to him in just a bit. First, a couple of comments that have come in from Mary. Says, sounds like a good book. I will have to add it to our book club. I cannot help but feel back then we didn't have these significant differences in our cost of living and income. I know I have a salty sense of seeing what was and what is now. No, Mary, I agree with you entirely. I think that the continuing income divide in this country has only exacerbated some of the challenges that come from trying to raise a family and the safety and the innocence of our neighborhoods. Mary goes on to ask, what's your take on Robert Kennedy Jr. running as an independent? And for me, that's very simple. I haven't brought it up previously, whether he was running as a Democrat or an independent, because there is nothing really new or novel about him. He's a goofball. He's an anti-vax goofball. He was identified that way early on. And when your own siblings in the Kennedy family put out a statement denouncing your candidacy, you're not going to go very far. Gary writes, very impressed with Representative Katrina Shanklin's record of getting 170 bills passed in the state. And I again hasten to add, that's with her in the minority. It doesn't mean every one of them is some kind of a landmark bill, but there's something to be said about trying to get things done. David from San Francisco is on the line and wants to talk briefly about our earlier discussion on the U.S. Supreme Court potentially trumping whatever the state Supreme Court might do on these jerry-rigged maps. David, good morning. What's on your mind?
Yeah, morning. There's a legal phrase, duty to care. And it is what we, the people, are supposed to be using when a politician is obviously doing self-serving as opposed to, you know, looking out for the good of the nation. And when self-serving politicians try to stack the deck of how an election is put together, that's pretty serious in my eyes. And so the Supreme Court is also supposed to be looking out for the good of the nation as opposed to self-dealing. And so this issue of duty to care has come up in a lot of ways in the past. There's a kind of a famous case where a police officer was standing outside of a stadium, and two guys got in a fight over who was going to be the winner of the game, and he did nothing to stop the fight, and one guy got badly injured because he just got pummeled right in front of a cop. And a court case said that the cop had no duty to care. Now, that's pretty ugly. You know, mm-hmm. When our public officials all of a sudden are given free license to ignore a problem and allow ill effects. And so the Supreme Court, whether it's the local Supreme Court, and, you know, you in Wisconsin have really got a strange deal now where isn't it your newly elected Supreme Court justice is up for recall?
Well, they're talking about potential impeachment. And, yeah, that's the kind of thing that gets right into, are you going to have that duty to care, duty to respect the voters or not? So it's a great point that you make, David. I appreciate you joining us a little late in the show here. I'm glad we could get you in to make that point. Let me turn now to Chad Holmes, sure, who's been listening in on this. David, have a great day. Chad's been listening in. First off, Chad, thank you again very much for you and Todd Alba for filling in last week while I was on break. I hope it was not too traumatic having to.
Oh, I tell you, it was incredibly difficult. I must say, I think you owe me big time. I'll say that much right now. It was my pleasure. It was a lot of fun. It's actually fun to be able to talk to the folks around the state of Wisconsin, because obviously my show is based right here in Wausau each and every day, and to be able to bring a couple of guests I thought were significant to the rest of the state, I thought I really enjoyed it. So no, and I'm glad you were able to get away. And the best part of it is, whenever I go on vacation, one of the hardest things is to completely disconnect. And it sounds like you were able to completely disconnect, and I think that was very important, because we all need that time to recharge and then get that, you know, real excitement to come back and do the jobs that we do.
Oh yeah, very, very much so. And for me, that annual road trip out west, we always do in the fall. You see the first bit of snow starting to fall on the mountaintops out there to tell you that the seasons are changing. But I'm always struck by the water. You know, you see this little tiny, very clear stream, you know, starts as a spring, basically comes right out of the mountain and starts trickling. And as you follow it through, it eventually becomes a creek and then a river. And it's all so clean. And you just have to remind yourself of, you know, the resources that we have here and the necessity to take care of them. It's just really great to be able to have the opportunity to do those kinds of things. You, on the other hand, you're back in the routine of covering, I believe you calling play-by-play on three games at once, it feels like you're doing three-dimensional chess or something like that?
I wish I could, but unfortunately,
I think you could.
I can only do one at a time, and I'm fortunate to have a couple of other guys who are able to help me out on these nights where we do have three games at the same time. And the fun part is that these are all important games this week. We're heading to the last week of the regular season, and looks as though at least two and maybe all three will be making the postseason playoffs. But it's a real fun time of year, and it's something that I really enjoy. And again, I'm very lucky to have a couple of guys I can trust to take the baton on those games that I can't do.
Very much so. And again, you can catch all of this through the Civic Media app and listen to games as well. As you've had a few headlines that you're following out there. While I was away, there was certainly the conservative radio host who was, arrested briefly. You have drama at the county level about things. You have what did Mayor Katie Rosenberg had a post about libraries last night, and again the people who look, if you want to be opposed to books, you know, that's fine, but to actually threaten to shut down libraries, you know, that's so beyond the pale, and we should expect better of elected officials than what some people are talking about there.
Why in the year 2023 are we still talking about this? One theory I have is people are so ignorant of history. We've seen this back about 100 years ago. We saw this back in the 1950s, and now we're seeing it again, where the idea of book bans. And again, I don't understand it. I don't understand the idea where the party of freedom is taking away the freedoms of others. It really, there's so many different layers to it that is baffling. And a number of these issues are just baffling to me. And you're right, we have a number of big issues. And I don't know, sometimes, you know, you talk to Katrina Shanklin, who I think is a brilliant public servant. You mentioned Mayor Rosenberg, who I think is a brilliant public servant. Right now, it is so difficult, I think, because there are so many extraneous things in there that take away from the focus on some really important issues that we're dealing with right now. Yep. And there's just too much of that. And it's still something I'm trying to wrap my arms around.
Well, I think, again, one of the great things about creating Civic Media and Up North News as well is the ability to actually thank some of these folks who are in thankless positions. And we get to at least have them on and remind them of people that do appreciate the good work they do. Thank you so much, Chad. Have a great show today. And thanks again for filling in.
You bet, Pat. Thank you.
You can hear Chad on Bull Falls Radio coming up next, or through the Civic Media website and app, because there are other shows on other stations all across the Civic Media Radio Network. And you can be part of this show again at 6 a.m. tomorrow. See you then.